Hello, this is the latest edition Between Consensus and Conspiracy podcast, where me, Jeremy, and my brother Julian talk about stupid shit. And when we first started doing it, I naively thought, well, what would happen when we run out of stupid shit to talk about? But the opposite is actually true. There is too much stupid shit, and the difficulty is trying to work out what of the stupid shit is most interesting. It's like trying to sculpture a chess piece out of a 20-ton rock, a 20-ton bloody boulder. There is no plan B. There is no plan blah. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, everything is blah, blah, blah. And then we're going to do our own little bit of blah, blah, yeah. Blah, blah, I suppose.
Add to the noise.
But we haven't talked to each other, maybe 3-4 months even, with the school holidays and stuff. But so much has happened. You know, the Sarah Everard stuff that we touched on a previous one, but the case actually went out and there's some horrific stuff gone on there. Then you got the pull out of Afghanistan, which is a massive cock-up. Murdered MP. I misgendered a woman one a little while back. But it was all right. She was cool. I was cool. I didn't know. I just thought she was a butch lesbian and I was talking to her as a her. And in the end, she said, sorry, my pronouns are he. I was like, but she's cool. She didn't chastise me. She just said respectfully. And yeah. I was happy to respect that. But then you got bodies with vaginas. Not allowed to call women yeah. anymore. They're now bodies with vaginas. Petrol crisis.
Yeah, petrol crisis in the UK. Yeah. Especially. How long that lot? That's yeah. a perfect example of it, isn't it? And now I keep on going back to that fellow's podcast when he said it's almost as though we need that kind of monthly. What was it? They used to have, back in the old days, in the 1950s, they'd have this like annual that would come out monthly of the last month's news.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he said we'd be better off with that because so many of these stories come and they hang around and they're the worst thing in the world, yeah. worst thing imaginable, and then within a couple of weeks, they're gone.
They're gone. You move on to the next thing.
Yeah. It's almost like Pete Trump, isn't it? Yeah. You're like throwing your toys out of a pram because of this, and then you forget about it.
But the whole media system's based on that, isn't it? I was thinking about it the other day. Started off with Brexit hysteria. Yeah. Then there was Trump hysteria.
Yeah.
Then there was COVID hysteria. Then there was lockdown. Then there was Black Lives Matter protests.
Yeah.
And then there was vaccine hysteria. And now we've got climate changes. It's like as soon as one dies out, they've got to bring in another one.
Yeah.
And it's just constantly, with the temperature high, constantly.
I do, out of all of them, I do worry more about the climate.
Yeah.
There's no end game. Do you know what I mean? With Brexit, it'll fizzle out, it'll fade out. People will stop talking about it eventually. Obviously, Trump's gone, so we move on to the next thing. COVID, hopefully, but the climate one's a big, long one, and maybe it'll just kind of, I don't know, depends out who you believe and what side you're on and how long you think it'll go on for. I do worry that they'll kind of, if something significant, that's the problem they've got, if something significant doesn't happen, people will get bored with it.
Yeah,
that's my concern.
Yeah, and we're not saying that we don't think it's a problem, are we?
No.
We're not saying that. It's just the way that to get people to act in a way that they want, they've constantly got to catastrophize and exaggerate. Yeah. And I'm not saying that. It's just the general talk. You see it everywhere.
Yeah, well, you hear the language of it. Boris saying 1 minute to midnight, you've got the all the people on the left in America, and Ocasio-Cortez, we've got how many more years now? 7 more years until it's all over?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, well, hold on, what happens in 7 years' time when everything's the same?
Mm.
How do you keep on pushing that? You can't get and in the UK, perfect example is the Insulate Britain protests.
Yeah.
Whenever you hear them interviewed,
yeah,
they are hysterical.
Did you see the stuff Roger Hallam put out? Did you see what he was talking to?
He was one of the founders of Extinction Rebellion.
Yeah. Did you hear what he was saying to a group of school kids?
No.
Did you not see the text of it?
Mm-mm.
He was saying, this is climate change. You will be in your house with your mum and dad and hordes of men will come in and rape you, rape your mums, murder your fathers. Honestly, it's frightening, and then we wonder why children are suffering anxiety.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, And yeah. and that's this is why on a broader point we talk about the part of me thinks why do we talk about this stuff? Can't we just unplug and just listen to music instead? And I'm sure that'd be better. But the fact of it is, it does creep into our world.
Yeah, of course, right. It does,
My son is 13. I wanted my children from an early age to point out things about the world, yeah? So really prominent people of history, I wanted them to know who they were. So when it comes around to going to school, they've got a little bit of a head start.
Mm.
So you could, if you show my kids a picture of the Prime Minister, they'll know who it is. Same with Winston Churchill, same with Adolf Hitler, and all sorts of people, because I talk to them about stuff. And my son came home the other day, and they're doing World War II in history. And he said, really deflated, said, "Dad, is it true that Churchill was a racist?" And the only thing I could say was, he said it at dinner, and I was quite glad he said it at dinner, because there was no one for me to ring. So it meant I had to wait till the morning to ring up his form teacher just to have a conversation, but it gave me a chance to formulate my conversation.
Yeah.
And I could put it in a better structured way rather than just being cross. And my issue with it was that Churchill was a person whose first experience of war was in 1898 in a war in Sudan. And he was a reporter at the time. His last big thing in relation to war was an aeroplane dropping an atom bomb on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, yeah. in Japan.
Yeah.
So you got one person's career. Oh, right. And the war in Sudan was fought on horseback and cavalry charges.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you got one person's career that went from cavalry charges to dropping an atom bomb.
Mm.
And we're going to dismiss him because he's a racist by today's standards.
Yeah, yeah.
And to be fair, it didn't actually come from the teacher. It came from the kids.
Yeah.
The kids, so it seeped through to the 13-year-olds saying, well, we don't have to speak to him.
Yeah.
And I think Churchill was such an interesting character, because I remember when Diane Abbott was on Radio 4 and she was asked, well, because she voted against a war, which probably, or attack in a country, is probably right. I'm not knocking that in retrospect. But she was asked, well, what war would you have voted for? And she said, well, obviously the Second World War.
Mm.
And that, to me, pointed out an element of his historic incoherence, because she obviously doesn't understand the atmosphere at the time.
Mm.
Churchill saw the dangers of communism and fascism long before the World War started.
Yeah,
there were big movements in Britain to disarm prior in the early 30s, prior to the Second World War starting in 1939. There were Labour MPs that wanted us to disarm at the time.
Yeah.
And look, and I get it, because you've got to look at the context of that time. They'd just not long come off the back of the First World War, where generations of kids were lost.
Mm.
But my son said to me the other day that they were looking at all the people in the school parish that had died because of Remembrance Day. And you see it in the churches where I go and pick the kids up from ballet. You know, there's plaques of like something like 150 names of people that died in a small parish. It's probably maybe 2 square yeah. miles, if that.
Yeah.
You know, so you can understand them not wanting to go to war. And if you're so fearful of it, you can convince yourself that it's not going to happen.
Mm.
But Churchill had vision. And he was arming in secret in the run-up to that. So he understood the dangers of not just fascism, but communism as well.
Yeah.
You know, and communism probably led to about, what, 4 or 5 times as many deaths as fascism ever did, mm. if you look at what happened yeah. in Russia and China. And this is a man that saw that, and not only saw it, was able to communicate that to a nation. And he's a very, very interesting character. And if we're now going to say that we don't need to know about these people simply because of some out-of-context words that were said about maybe the Kurds or maybe, you know, the Muslims that they were at war with at the time, or maybe even Africans, if we're going to dismiss all that because of what was said, I don't think it's education.
No, of course not.
And what I said to the teacher, I said, look, what we've got is that this is a perfect opportunity to say that I'm not saying that we shouldn't teach the truth. I don't think we should have myths and legends. I think we should teach the good and the bad to prominent people of history, because we need to remind people that they were humans. They weren't saints and they weren't gods. And they had a mixture of good and bad. And what we've got to do, what education should be about, is weighing up the good and the bad. And if the weight of good massively outweighs the bad, then that's a good thing. But that's not what they're trying to do. And then I said, but if you're going to do that, then are we going to be consistent? Because he's also a religious teacher.
Yeah.
So I said, so when we teach about Gandhi, are we going to teach about the language that he used against Africans, which I see often, but those people are probably unaware of the years that he studied law in South Africa. I read this 20, 30 years ago in his autobiography. Gandhi studied law in South Africa, and yes, he did say some... use bad language in relation to black Africans, but he also spent a lot of free pro bono lawyer work trying to dismantle apartheid long before it became fashionable. So people never mention that bit, they only pick out the bits. But are we going to talk about, when you talk about Martin Luther King, are you going to talk about the new FBI leaks stuff that came out that a woman was raped in a room next to him within earshot? And are we going to talk about the details of his many infidelities? When we talk about religion and Islam and Muhammad, are we going to talk about the more suspect parts of what Muhammad did? Are we going to talk about child brides, slavery and their violent conquests? And he said, no, we probably wouldn't. And I said, so what we're saying is that we will pick and choose who we look at the bad parts. And that is my big issue. Because what I said was that, remember I spoke about that program at school that tried to eradicate racism.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the most... an award-winning show, obviously. It brought out critical race theory-style education from America and plonked it in a school in Britain. And they were dividing up kids in race. And you had mixed-race kids in tears because they didn't know if they were white or black. You know, it was horrendous. And then you had white kids in tears because they could hear the non-white kids laughing and joking. And then the white kids were kind of... all solemn and feeling left out. But there was a bit in there where they got all the kids to bring something that they were proud of their culture. Yeah. So they had a girl of South African origin that brought a beaded hand glove, and all the class was, ooh, nice, yeah. A Ghanaian woman, a girl with a colourful outfit. A Pakistani kid with a hand-embroidered prayer mat. You had a Japanese girl with a Shinto sheet of writing or whatever. I probably bodged that up, but you get my point. But then they came to the white British kids and you could tell they were at a loss. One kid brought on a policeman's helmet because his great-great uncle was a distant relative to Sir Robert Peel, who started the police force. And another one brought a George Cross. And then the teachers frowned on the George Cross. And like I said to the teacher, I said, we've got an issue here. If we're going to say to everybody else you could be proud of your culture, but another group of kids, you should be ashamed of yours, we're going to have problems. And every time there is something that we could be proud of as a Brit, it's frowned upon. You see it. You get a famous person, post a picture of an English breakfast on Twitter. Within minutes, you got people saying, did you know sausages were brought really invented out of Mesopotamia in the last years? And fried eggs aren't really British, they're Jewish. And, you know, you've seen it. It always happens. Yeah. What? St. George's Day. Did you know that St. George was actually a Turk and he didn't actually kill a dragon? Yeah. And it's like, you say, what are British values? And you start bringing up values. Oh, so what you're saying is foreign people don't have those values. Yeah. You know, you can't. Name me one thing that you could go publicly now about being British and being proud without having a sort of like a raised eyebrow when that happens. And like I said to the teacher, I said, we're creating an issue if you're going to have such a divided way of looking at things. Yeah. So, sorry, I went on. That was a bit of a long one. But so, yeah, then he said to me, like, obviously, yeah, I take your point.
This is the teacher.
He said, I'll take your point. He said, I haven't really thought of that in relation to young British kids. He said, and you obviously kind of have read up, and I know you're coming from a good place. So I thought, that's all right. But then I remembered the Gordon Brown, Gillian Duffy, do you remember?
Yeah.
He's all nice to their face. When he put the phone down, he said, oh, it's just some bigoted woman. So I don't know if I'm now known as the bigoted man. I hope not, you know, because I come from a good place. But.
Yeah.
So it does affect us, doesn't it?
Of course it does. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It seeps in everywhere, doesn't it? I think it's quite. You know what interests me at the moment is I do think it's quite nice that these debates are happening more and more. I think one good thing about Trump being gone, hopefully for good, is that it leaves space for those conversations to be had. Yeah. And you can see it creeping in a lot more. Yeah. You can see more, well, like a perfect example, and we've discussed it before, was the whole kind of lab leak theory.
Like the
origins of COVID. It was, as soon as he was out of office, suddenly you can talk about it.
Yeah.
But just stuff like kind of border crises. I know that the relevant this week was the they've got a bit of a border crisis thing going on the Poland and Belarus border, haven't they? Where supposedly the Belarus government are shipping migrants to the Polish border in order to
on buses and
paying them to get in. Taking them to the border to try and push them into Poland to start off some conflict and disrupt Europe and a revenge for the European sanctions on them. But just the way that is being portrayed in the media, that story, is totally different, I've noticed. There's a lot more talk about invasions and a lot more talk about... And suddenly we're not talking about how good all immigrants are.
Yeah.
And how it's not a problem, but there's a much more nuanced discussion.
Yeah.
It's funny.
It needs to be had, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
because nothing's black and white and simple.
No. Especially something like that.
There's
something nefarious going on, isn't there?
And there's so much to it. It's like you were saying, there's an element of manipulation as well.
Yeah.
You see, listen, you, if anyone's in court, if anyone's back is up against the wall, Look, my son didn't get into the school that he wanted a while ago, and they were going to put him 4 miles away in a school that he didn't know anyone.
Mm.
It sent us into a bit of a tailspin, and we had to have an appeal, and we had to structure an argument, like a legal argument. And my brain went into work in how to put the best argument across that would get the result that we wanted. And I'm honest about that. But I guarantee that is how every human brain works. If your back's up against the wall, i.e. in a court case or something like that, you are going to create a narrative in your head that you will ultimately believe and then hand it out that's going to give you the best chance of you winning winning the argument. It's the same with every migrant coming into this country. And I'm not knocking them. I'm not saying they're all liars for one second. But everybody will put the strongest argument out there to get the result that they want. Yeah. It's how human brains work, right? That isn't a good thing, it's not a bad thing, it's just a fact.
Yeah.
So there is manipulation. You were saying about the smoke.
There was footage on, I saw some footage about, again, going back to the Polish border crisis, of some, like, adults with a what looked like a kind of 12-year-old kid, just sucking smoke, and blowing the smoke into the kid's eyes in order to make it look as though he was crying.
Yeah.
In order to supposedly push a narrative that there was tear gas being used and gunshots being fired. And so, but that's out there on social media, and it's interesting. Then when the following day, I pick up the newspapers, and on the front page of the newspapers, they've just got the usual pictures of like women and children.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's so much more to it. But going back to what I was saying about Trump being out of office, there does seem to be like a bit more breathing space to have those more nuanced discussions. It's not when Trump, the mainly negative thing about Trump being in power was you could dismiss all of those things as racism or sexism, or we don't want to talk about it because the bad orange man said that. So obviously it's not the case. And I think there's definitely. I mean, look, you can look at the results of the election in America just now.
Yeah,
there's what was it in Louisiana?
Virginia.
The local elections they had there, and there was a huge swing from the left to the right. And I think again that's because I know the media is still trying to push the whole racist narrative, which is like nonsense. It's the discussions are being had, and they can't frame it all as which is what they try. If you look at that election, they tried to pin Trump on.
I'm worried that sometimes we go down American politics, and not so many people listen to it as much. But I'm pretty obsessed. But America's so much more entertaining than British politics,
because, like we said before, whatever happens there comes in 5 years later.
But just as a background into what happened in Virginia won. Biden won by 10 points. Yeah, it's now become it's become recently a solid blue
state. 8-9 months ago,
it's become a solid blue Democratic state. So now they're trying to say, it's uneducated white women that are, Trumpist and stuff like that. But a lot had happened in Virginia in the last few months. There was a case where they were trying the critical race theory, where race has to be brought into every subject, including maths and science.
In schools,
from the age of five, and also now going into kindergarten. There's a brilliant podcast I've just sent to you, Unheard One, with a lady called what's her name?
Noemi Osmani?
I'll attach it to the notes. But she comes from Pakistani origin. She's very liberal in her, but literal meaning of liberal. So, you know, free speaking and stuff. But she's also a feminist and left leaning. And she used to speak out against the more strict versions of Islam and took a more feminist Islamic slant. But her kids were being affected by schools. And then there's also Chinese mums, because they're saying that they can see what happened in China now coming over to here, where indoctrination is going into schools. And you've got, you know, you're turning mixed race kids against white parents and stuff, because the children as young as five are basically being told that whiteness and white people are the problem. And people had turned their back on that. And what also happened was that they were trying to bring in, gender-free toilets. Mm. And in one school, a 14-year-old girl was raped by a boy in a skirt in a toilet. And on one of the school meetings, the dad of the girl that had raped, and the guy had been charged, I'm confused because it's two counts of sodomy, one of anal sodomy, which I don't understand because I thought sodomy was anal, but anyway, that's a quick aside. And then what happened was the school kicked the boy out, put him to another school, and an incident happened at another school.
Yeah.
And in the school meeting, the dad started to speak up, understandably angry after his daughter had been raped. And he got shouted down. People were saying, "You're a liar, you're a liar." A woman was...
Well, didn't he ask the school board if there were cases of rape
in a toilet?
And they said there had never been any cases. That's why he got more angry, and that's why he ended up being...
And you had other parents, activist parents, calling him a liar in his face. Police came in to arrest him. He resisted arrest. And then he was portrayed as a domestic terrorist who was a racist, who didn't want critical what his children learning about slavery. And even, I'm fairly sure it went quite high up in domestic in democratic politics. And then the democratic leader said in an interview that he doesn't think parents should have input into what schools teach, which pissed off parents, totally understandably. And then what happened was the teaching unions went to the high-up Democrats and said, "We want these people who are protesting all the changes that are happening in schools," and labelled them as domestic terrorists. And then the head legal man in the Democratic team got the FBI to start looking at parents that were complaining about what's being taught in schools and treated as domestic terrorists. Mm. So this is all the background to that. Yeah. And then it seemed like there was a massive 15-point swing, and now a Republican is in charge. And still in the media, it's now being portrayed as white supremacist.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like you say, maybe in some places that there is this conversation going on, but not in a lot of the media. The very American media, they seem very resistant to it. But that's why people then go to podcasts and YouTube and stuff.
Yeah. Because it's like we've said before many times, the media's dying and they're kind of complaining about trying desperate to survive, aren't they?
Yeah, desperate to get...
Which is why they're trying to shut down, get Facebook to shut down certain sites, and which is why they're trying... Apparently they're even talking about... limiting podcasts now. They're trying to say there should be limits as to what is being said and police podcasts.
But you get more sense out of Russell Brand on YouTube than you do get on most CNN.
Yeah, absolutely.
100%. I've been a critic of Russell Brand in the past. I've liked him and disliked him. I quite like him now, his YouTube channel. He's willing to talk about difficult subjects.
Well, all these people. I'm like, Joe Rogan. Listen to Joe Rogan and Brett Weinstein. Look, I don't agree with chunks of what they say. Yeah. I don't really agree with a lot of Joe Rogan's politics. I don't really agree with the whole kind of not anti-vax side. But Brett Weinstein seems very kind of very negative towards the vaccine. He's been pulled up on it quite recently, and it's gone on for a long time. He was one of the first people to come out and say, well, there was probably more reason to look into a lab leak.
Yeah.
And he was one of the early proponents of that, and he's been proven to be right.
Yeah.
But he's also gone down the route of the vaccines possibly could be dangerous and we need to worry about it. But my point is, he seems to be coming from an honest place. He's having honest discussions. Yeah. And he'll say himself, he doesn't know whether it's true or not. Yeah. It's just, we're trying to get to truth.
Yeah.
And that journey towards truth is messy. And all these people, whether it's Russell Brand or Joe Rogan or whoever, they all seem to be coming from the angle that they want to get at the truth. And they might make some mistakes along the way, and they apologise for those mistakes, but they are trying their best. Whereas so much of the media are adamant that they know the truth, and they need to give you the truth, and they need to shut down everyone else who isn't telling the truth.
Because and that's the issue. It seems like there's they think. We're living in a world where no one can monopolise the messaging.
No.
I think they want to monopolise the messaging for probably valid reasons, because they think if we can get most people to do X, Y and Z, we can control the virus and stuff like that. So I get it. But you're not, you know, it's out of the box. You can't now monopolise the information.
No.
People have got a massive, you know, access to massive amounts of information. Some of it's shit, for sure, but some of it is bloody brilliant and better than the shit you get on the telly.
Yeah, of course.
You know, if you just watch the telly and listen to the radio, I would go absolutely mental. Because I think at an intelligence level, I think it's probably, out of 10, it's about 2.
Mm.
I could probably get a range in between 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 on online.
Mm.
But you don't know what's true. But I trust my intelligence enough to be able to listen to something and say, I agree with that and I disagree with that.
Yeah.
I don't demand that someone I like has to agree with everything I say. It doesn't work like that. And sometimes people give me the wrong, say something that is the wrong opinion, and I automatically, my back goes up. But it's sowed a seed, and then over time I change. Because I have definitely changed in the years that we've been doing this podcast. I've definitely changed for the better, I think. I've come back to the middle. And I'm understanding humans more. And I don't get angry. I kind of look at why things are happening. And I think that's really interesting. The mechanics of it all.
Yeah.
But it's that tribal stuff. It's the same with this Kyle Rittenhouse trial. It's the tribal stuff. That what happens is, if you're in that group, it doesn't matter what the court case says. It doesn't matter what the evidence says, because you've already made up your mind. So any evidence that goes against what you believe, you simply dismiss as white supremacy, as this, you know, stuff like that. And I don't know if he's going to get found guilty or not. It seems like the process. Kyle Rittenhouse was the 17-year-old who went to Kenosha when rioting was happening, and he was guarding a car showroom, and it all kind of went a bit wobbly, and he got chased through the streets. The day after, the New York Times basically said exactly what's been going on in the court case.
Yeah.
He was chased. The first guy that had been threatening him, threatened to rip his head off, calling him the N-word, calling them all the N-word. The guy was white, they were white. The guy was a convicted child sex offender.
He'd just been let out of
a mental hospital and was on drugs. He was seen by the helicopter hiding by a bin, trying to jump out on Rittenhouse. And I think I heard today that he had a gun on him and he was reaching for his gun. He got shot. Then Rittenhouse got chased. Then while he was getting chased, he tried to give himself up to the police. The police just drove past him. He was running away. He got hit over the head a couple of times with a skateboard. He was on his back. The guy with the skateboard was pulling at his gun, according to the evidence. Because he's pulling at his gun, he could hear people saying, kill him, get him, cranialising.
Other shots were going off.
Yeah, so he's ended up shooting that kid. And then the bloke that survived went and pulled out a gun. The photos show it is when he lifted the gun that Kyle Rittenhouse shot him. Yeah. So there is clearly, so many people basically said that this should never have even gone to trial. But I don't know.
I'm an self-defence.
Yeah, because it's clear self-defence. Yeah. They argue that, but you having a gun shows that you are antagonising, and you can't have that as self-defence. But it reminds me of that old joke, you know, the derogatory joke about the Irish, but it could fit anywhere. You know, when you're lost and you go up to someone and say, can you tell me how to get to X, Y and Z? And the man stands there and thinks and says, well, I wouldn't start from here.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, all right, mate, but we are here.
So it's a bit like that. You know, he shouldn't have taken the gun. I get that. But at the point where his life is in danger and he's got a gun, is he able to use that gun, considering at least two of the people he shot were also armed, yeah?
Yeah.
I think. So it's clear that it's a difficult one, but that's not how the media have portrayed it from day one.
No,
they've said that he's a white supremacist, he was hunting black people, even though everyone he killed was white. And even the court testimony, they're dismissing every strong argument. They've dismissed every strong argument. So no matter what happens, you're going to have 50% of the people that are just going to say, no, the trial wasn't fair.
Yeah.
And aren't those people the mirror image of the Trumpist that won't accept an election result?
Election, yeah.
Aren't they?
Absolutely.
Tell me the difference.
Yeah.
You know, the cornerstones of a functioning democracy are democracy itself and the rule of law. Mm. Yeah. So one side is saying democracy didn't count, like the Trumpist.
Yeah.
And then the other side is saying, no, the legal system's fucked, it doesn't work. Because every case that we want doesn't go our way.
Yeah, yeah.
They're two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
So it's frightening times, really, because I don't know.
My concern with that is that, like you said, it probably shouldn't have gone to trial.
Mm.
Because it's on the verge of being thrown out. The judge has had a right go at the prosecution. But my concern is that it did go to court, and everything is being politicised. And it goes back to what you were saying about what's going on in schools. Everything's being politicised. Yeah. You see it more and more.
Yeah.
I think we started this podcast, I don't know, 4 years ago or whatever, and I think a lot of people within our family thought we were nutters for going on about this stuff quite a lot. And it's like now I see it, I've got a kind of bit of a smile on my face when I go to family meetings and stuff, and everyone's talking about what we've been talking about for the last 4 years.
Right.
And it's and I don't even bring it up. Before you know it, bang, you're into like.
I'm bored of it now. People bring it up and it's like, oh, can't we talk about something different?
Yeah,
but it's the same. Did you see that? You know that Ridley Road, that program Ridley Road. It's a drama based on after the Second World War. There were still some Mosleyites. Some, you know, basically after the Second World War, what happened to the Jews? Jews were gassed, they're murdered, and the Holocaust. And I think after the Second World War, there were still some black shirt sympathisers. Yeah, so I think it was a story of a family that were. Anti-Semitic at the time, and
because this is set in the UK, because Mosley was the fascist leader in Britain, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was set in the UK, and I read the interview with the lady that made it, and she's a Jew from, I think, Iranian background, Iranian heritage, Iranian Jew. And again, I thought, is this going to be the same old thing? You know, where it's going to be, oh, this is the rise of fascism, linking it to Brexit. And of course, it was, because I think there was they called the midwife with fascists. The review of it was, and again there were commentary of taking back control. Do you know what I mean? So obviously linking it to Boris and Brexit and stuff. But she had some interesting things because I was thinking she was talking about all this anti-Semitism that's about. But if you look at America and here, in both cases, most anti-Semitism is coming from the left and from Islam. Not much from, and in America, quite a lot from the right, I presume.
Yeah.
But not so much here from the right, a few cranks. So I'm thinking, are we going to get round to this complex, to your simplistic narrative?
Yeah,
And then,
you look at the ambassador of Israel the other day, he got booted, allowed to run off from the London School of Economics, the university.
And they were saying it was just booing her. They weren't, they were running at police.
They weren't Trump supporters, were they? Or fascist right wingers?
No. But but her point was, she did then get onto the subject and she said, it disappoints me that sometimes you get anti-Semitism from the left. And so the point she made, and I think so many people assume this, that hatred is part of the right. It's fully accepted and expected that this sort of bigotry, or any bigotry, is part of the DNA of the right.
Mm.
Yet when it comes from the left, it's kind of like a freak accident.
Yeah.
It's just an anomaly.
Yeah.
Have I said that right?
Anomaly.
Anomaly. Yeah. Anomaly. I know that would have given me nightmares for weeks ahead. Yeah, an anomaly. And I just think that that's clearly biased thinking, isn't it? And
absolutely.
The problem with it is when is when all the filmmaking is monopolised by people that think the same, so the BBC, all the media, and then it's seeping into schools, you can then you're then preparing a massive part of the population to be picked off by people that will then pretend and use all this stuff to say, look, I'm on your side, I recognise your problems. Because that's where populism, for want of a better word, comes from. If you've got a whole group of population that just that feels like they're being had a dig at constantly. And I do feel that. I feel like I'm constantly attacked for having centrist views.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm constantly under attack and I should be ashamed of what I am. And I refuse it because it's bullshit.
Well, but the thing is, they're not going to be able to change the way you could go in. Look, we do change our views, don't get me wrong. Go back 50 years, totally different views on homosexuality than we had then. So views do change, obviously, they evolve over time. But fundamentally, people are like kind of roughly 50-50, aren't they? They're kind of right and left. And you're not going to change that dynamic. You're not going to get 90% of a population being left-wing. You're not going to get that.
No.
It's a fundamental, going back to what you were saying about human, it's what we are. We're
thankfully so.
Yeah,
that we're not going to get
it. You need
because it. You've seen when the left get total control, what carnage comes. And you've seen when the right get total control, what carnage comes. So we need each other as a counterbalance.
Yes.
It's trying to take the best out of both.
Yeah.
And the Jonathan Haidt book, The Righteous Mind, how good people are divided by politics and religion. He makes the point that your political opinions, 50% roughly of your political opinions, is based on innate personality traits. And you're not changing innate personality traits.
No.
Yeah. So if you're a tidy, organised person, you're much more likely to be of a conservative mindset.
Yeah.
And if you're artistic and a bit sort of like all over the place, you're much more likely to be on the left.
Yeah.
And to be truth, none of us are right or left. If you did a questionnaire, we're all a mishmash of freedom, libertarianism, right, left. And that's why I just don't like people just being put into groups.
No, no.
Because it's lazy then, because then you don't have to look at the complicated intricacies.
We can't even, it's like racist, bigots, homophobes, anti-vaxxers. It's just nonsense.
It's just...
Most of it. Yeah. Of course there's extreme people. Yeah, I know a couple of people like that myself, who have gone down a rabbit hole and think the whole thing's a conspiracy theory. Yeah. And that's where you go far right, and it does start heading towards Judaism.
Because
you look at those kind of extreme conspiracy theorist people.
They've all got that in the background.
And it always pops up. And that's a concern. But yes, going back to what you were saying about the left never having to deal with that anti-Semitism, the racism on the left. It's what Jordan Peterson says, isn't it? We as a society, we know how to deal with the far right. We don't know how to deal with the far left.
Yeah.
We've never had an intelligent discussion about when people go too far left.
Yeah.
It always comes down to, fundamentally they
want to make the world a better place.
Yeah, they want everyone to be equal and fair and like, it's good, no problem. But it's not. There's something kind of more nefarious than that. And there is a lot of hatred and there is a lot of jealousy and bigotry and kind of egotism and which is why it always goes wrong. And like you said a minute ago, the death rates are far higher on the left in the last 100 years than they have been on the right.
Yeah. I mean, that's what turns me off about commentary in relation to left-leaning politics at the moment. I genuinely think that the left is anti-intellectual at this point. There are elements on the right, for sure, but the left rarely want to have an argument. They simply want to throw out accusations that smear the people holding the thing. That's it. They want to close down debate.
Hmm.
I mean, it's quite interesting. I had an interesting thought the other day. I was talking to, a bit of an internet interaction with a lefty friend of mine. And I sent him, there was a really interesting article in The Spectator about women that got pregnant 50 odd years ago that were treated abominably. They got pregnant out of wedlock and they took their children away. I think I would have sent it to you as well. And it was really heartbreaking because it told the story of women that, you know, they went to the loo, come back, the baby that they bonded with was gone. They never weren't able to get back together with them. Then later on, the mums tried to get back in contact with the kids, but often the kids were not interested because they thought they were abandoned, didn't know the half of it. They really weren't. You know, a lot of mixed-race kids, not always, obviously, white kids. And I sent it to my lefty friend, and he said that there's evidence of where progressivism works. Yeah, how that change mainly came from the left.
Yeah,
and I agree with that. Sometimes it can go too far because now you're not allowed to even say that children born to two parents do better than children born to one parent.
Because
then all of a sudden you're stigmatising single mums and stuff like that. Mm. So again, you can't have that discussion without having horrible accusations made against you. But the evidence is clear. So sometimes it can go the other way. But the interesting thought that I had was that I heard a saying a little while ago on that Modern Wisdom that we listened to, where he said that tradition are the solutions to the problems that we've forgotten a long time ago.
Mm.
Yeah? So, and that makes sense, doesn't it? So, if you go back from the 50s and 60s, when that was happening, if you had a child out of wedlock in the previous 200 years prior to that, that's fucking trouble.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There was no welfare state.
No.
You know, a lot of people were moving down from the countryside post-industrialisation into cities and stuff like that. They didn't have family structures ready to support them.
No.
If you had a kid, you know, in Georgian London, that's why they started up the first foundling school, wasn't it? Coram, wasn't it? Coram,
yeah,
Coram's
yeah.
Field, Coram's yeah. Hospital. And he took 20 years trying to get the rich and wealthy to donate money so that they could find homes for abandoned kids.
Mm.
Babies were found dead in the gutters all around London at that time because people couldn't. And the hospital became so popular of mums giving up their children. If you go to the museum now, you can see what trinkets the mums left for their children so that they would remember them and at least thought that their mother cared for them when they grew up. And you look at the display case of the stuff that was left, and often it was like St. Christopher's pendants, but sometimes it was just a fucking cut of ribbon because it didn't have anything else. Yeah. It's fucking heartbreaking. And then these are the best trained kids in the end. They went into service, but they understood. You look at it, you look at the diets and the menu that they're, even then in 17th century London, they knew that the good quality food was a good idea. So you look at the horrors of having a child out of wedlock.
Yeah.
You can understand why stigma as a social tool came into place to find a way of discouraging that.
Yeah.
Now, by today's standards, you could look at different ways, more sensible ways of doing it, like education for a start. If you put that there, into that there, something bad's going to happen. Do you know what I mean? Kids, young girls didn't know that, and then all of a sudden you're driven by your desires.
Yeah.
Young boys and girls don't know what the fuck's going on. Yeah. Girls didn't even know they were pregnant without even knowing it.
Yeah.
So yeah, for sure, by today's standards, there's better ways of doing it. So what happens is, but then life changes. And life changes quicker than tradition does.
Mm.
So tradition always can only ever lag behind the changes in life. Tradition can't change ahead of you cannot preempt changes. It's impossible. So what happens is tradition will always change. And that's why we do need progressivism to say, look, those solutions to those problems are no longer functionable for today's society, so we need to change that.
Yeah.
Now that's a grown-up way of looking at it. Instead, we say, them bastards, they were backward, they were racist.
Yeah.
You look at it, it's the same with the patriarchy. The patriarchy is that big overbearing force that's an invisible that you can never ever see, but it's the thing designed by men to hold women down.
Yeah.
Enough bullshit, in my opinion.
Yeah.
What's happened was, ways of being have evolved that suited the time that they evolved in. And then society changes, and then those traditions no longer exist, no longer function.
Yeah.
So instead of saying that we hate women and we're just all misogynist, what happens is that changes, and then we need to change with it. And that's why, you can look at it on race, on homosexuality. But what happens is that there are people out there that want to get you to their way of thinking, so they just portray this as a hateful thing that we need to fight against.
Yeah.
And that ratchets up tensions all over the place.
Yeah.
When really, we're just fucking beings looking at the best way to try and get by and live a functioning life.
Yeah, of course.
And that's what does my head in, because so much of this anger and hatred is just generated for political gain.
Yeah, of course it is. Well, you look at any society. Well, what societies aren't patriarchal.
Yeah.
We get on a plane now and go to South America, some tribe that's never been interacted with before.
Yeah.
Mind you, they'll probably have a Man United t-shirt on.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, but they'll guarantee the blokes will be hunting and gathering, and the little girls will be doing what their mums do, and like playing with little babies and dolls and models, of, and the bloke, the 2 year old kid will be running around pretending to chuck a spear. That's what it is, isn't it? Survival.
Of course it
they
is.
They need that to survive. They need that structure to survive. But you're right. Yeah, you the more progress you have in society, the more you can be egalitarian.
Did you see the Who Do You There's a program on the BBC called Who Do You Think You Are, which again I think this is promising. This is a promising sign, where they go get a famous person. I wish they'd do it with me. One reason I'd hate to be famous, but I'd like to be famous to go on Who Do You Think You Are because I'd love that to find out about my DNA. But who's Alex Scott, the mixed race black ex England footballer, Arsenal and England footballer?
What girl?
She's a commentator.
Alex Scott.
She got had. That arsehole Digby had a pop at her for a working class accent, didn't
they?
She stuck up for herself.
Yeah.
Well, they did a Who Do You Think You Are with her. She's mixed race. She thought she came from Irish background. Her mum was a bit Irish, but there was Eastern European Jewry in there as well. So she went back on her mum's side to find out the persecution of the Jews in Eastern Europe prior to World War One, and then they moved to there, and then they had to move to there. So that was interesting. What I also found interesting, she lived in London all her life. East London by commercial road, and she would walk past the Cable Street mural. There's a famous when Mosley tried to walk on Cable Street because Cable Street East London was a very Jewish area, but between the wars, and what happened was the black shirts, the anti-Semitist black shirts trying to march on Cable Street, and there was a big battle. It's a brilliant, watch the footage, you know, marbles under horses' feet and stuff like that.
East London then was full of Jews, wasn't
it? But all the Jews, the unions, the left all got together to fight them, and but they're all in three-piece suits and bowler hats, properly having it. And but there's a mural there now, and she said that she walked past that mural every day of her life and never ever knew what it meant. And I'm thinking, how can that not know that? If I drive past that with my kids, that's the first thing I'd talk about. If I've got a passenger and you drive past, that's the first thing I'd mention. Look at that. It's a bit of amazing bit of history.
Yeah.
And not only did no one tell her, you do then wonder, well, where's the inquisitive mind? Do you know what I mean? You can walk past that every day and think, well, what is that? Yeah. So that was the first thing. But the second bit, they went to a Jamaican family. So we went back to Jamaica. And that was lovely because she'd never been before and she'd always been holding out. And then there was going to be obviously a kind of slavery connotation because slaves went from Africa to Jamaica to, you know, chop, make sugar and sugar cane and stuff like that. And then she went back a couple of generations and found out that her great-great-great-granddad or whatever was a slave but owned slaves. And she was really taken aback.
And he was a black guy?
So she never, it never occurred to her that that could have been the case.
Mm.
And this is what I'm talking about, broad education. We need a broader education. Because if any one of us has got as far as we are today, I guarantee that you don't even have to go back too many generations. Every one of us has got a murderer, a rapist, or a thief in our DNA. Every one of us, because that's what you probably had to do to survive hundreds, thousands of years ago. And she was really taken aback by that. And then you've got to look at things differently. I read the other day, I didn't even realise the other day that the native, I mean, you know the whole thing about America with the Africans were taken to America, so there was a slavery there. So the sort of white Americans oppressed the black slaves, but also the Native Americans, and the idea is that the genocide of the Native Americans, that's a lot more complex, but don't want to get drifted down that tributary. But I didn't know that the five top tribes of Native Americans owned African slaves. And traded African slaves.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
No, I didn't know.
And but what the argument was when they were getting freedom and getting their own reservations, they looked at society outside and saw what the successful whites were doing and thought, well, how to be a successful Native American is we have to emulate the whites.
Yeah.
So they did what the whites did and owned slaves.
Yeah.
So that is the argument. That, but you can't really hold, because they weren't bringing them in. They were just adjusting to the environment that they were in. So then we shouldn't really be so judgmental on them.
Mm.
But isn't that what we do when we judge history?
Yeah, of course. Look, they're tribes. Fucking, how do you think tribes survive? Like you said, do you know what I mean? This is how we survive, by murdering people.
Yeah.
This is what you do, isn't it? They didn't, they weren't like look, it's that bloody, what do you call it? The native, the noble savage.
Like, yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
nonsense. Yeah. It's like the reason they're successfully survived yeah. is because they yeah. probably raped and like burned down the
theory,
locals.
The theory of a noble savage was Rousseau, wasn't it? They're yeah, yeah, French.
Yeah.
I don't know, was he an artist or just a philosopher at the time? I yeah. can't remember. But he basically said that in the African countries or whatever, tribal countries, they all were living harmonious, feeding each other grapes until the white people came along and fucked it yeah. all up.
But there's an element of that in yeah. the whole kind of, going right back to what we started with, that Greta Thunberg thing.
Yeah.
You know, the whole environmental movement, there's yeah. an element of that in there, yeah. isn't there? Whereas we were better off before. Yeah. She had a go at Britain, didn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, yeah,
for the Industrial Revolution. Yeah. We were better off before the Industrial Revolution. We were better off when we were living a simple life. And it's like, yeah...
But what,
it's a tough one, isn't it?
Have you
it
ever really read? Is. I mean, you talked about the Orwell book when he went to North around oh, right, North, right, in yeah, the 30s.
Yeah, yeah.
And the horrors of what people yeah. lived in there.
Yeah, yeah.
At the turn of the end of the 19th century, the average person in the world, 97% or 93% of the population were living on less than a pound a day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if it was terrible in the 30s, imagine what it was like 200 years before, prior yeah, to yeah. the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah. I mean, the Industrial Revolution was probably a real high point of horror, because yeah. I would have thought you go back a bit further.
Yeah.
And they probably, I mean, I would have thought a lot of those tribal lifestyles weren't that bad. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe.
There were horrors yeah. that went on, yeah. sure. You know what I mean? They wouldn't have, like, disabled kids wouldn't have stood a chance.
Yeah.
But I would have thought they were reasonably egalitarian. I would have thought they were horrific. One tribe met each other. Boom! It was like all sorts
no of heating.
Yeah.
No light. No windows. No draft yeah. excluders. No washing machines.
But I would have thought there was less kind of extreme exploitation. And I think when I talk about the Industrial Revolution, when you look at like the turn of the century, turn of the last century, and parts of Manchester, I've said before, the average lifespan was 19, wasn't it?
I think a lot of that prior to the Industrial Revolution was landowners, were wealthy lords that mistreated their landowners, trying yeah. to grow food, yeah, people yeah. encroaching on, I don't know. Apparently, the Industrial Revolution was an improvement, in a way, from what they had.
Right.
People weren't forced into factories.
No, sure.
They decided to go, because yeah. they could still live in families. All right, the kids had to work and stuff like that, and the wages were shit, and they were exploited. But it did mean that they could work together and feed themselves to a certain extent. And that was what bringing people together enabled them to start unions. And that was the yeah, birth yeah, yeah, of the
yeah,
left.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
was the birth of the left-wing politics at that
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
So it was a progress in a sense. But if you look at poverty levels around the world, once industrialisation came in,
oh yeah, yeah,
fucking improved.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Once you got over the hump of yeah. the exploitation, the extreme exploitation. But yeah, absolutely.
If you someone put, because you know that, what is it, the Microsoft or whatever, they do a speech now. Hi, I am. I go by he, him. I have brown hair, a Caucasian thing. And the woman then went in saying, "We are doing this meeting on stolen land from this tribe, yes. this tribe,
yes.
and this Native American guy." That I follow on Twitter said, yeah, but you say those tribes, but what tribes did they wipe out yeah. to take that land?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
They, you know, yeah. there was massive tribal conflict.
Yeah.
There's a brilliant book, Joe Rogan talks about it. I've read it. It's fucking mind-blowing. It's one of the books, that, you know, I could tell, judge a book by the amount of notes I take. And I think it was called, I can't remember. I'll remember it in a minute. But yeah, it's the history of the rise of the white Americans and that last 100 years at the time of the Civil War. It was fucking barbaric, mate. Cannibalism, you know, intertribal cannibalism.
Yeah.
Babies on barbecues.
Native Americans.
Yeah. Natives on barbecues. Scalping was just the half of it, you know. They had slavery as well. They took other tribes as slaves and workers, you know, scraping buffalo skins and stuff.
Well, that's
like
what I mean. Yeah, the whole kind of like they own black slaves and they were only copying the whites. They were doing that stuff, of course.
Yeah, long before. Yeah,
but it's fun. It's yeah, and that goes back to what we were saying about Churchill and stuff. It's fun. That's what one of the parts that's annoying about it. It's that you stop history here.
Yeah,
you only talk about slavery when it revolves around whites exploiting the Africans, and we don't talk about the Middle East slave trade. But you know what I mean? It's like, it's that constant. Kind of, we only talk about part of history.
Yeah.
And history's massively complex, isn't it?
Well, she, what was it? The, you know, the, it's, yeah, you got to look at the context and the history and what led to it. It's like any bit of history, you can write another two books on what led to that point. What's the name? One of the American ladies who wrote the 1619 Project, she did something about the
Hannah Nicole Jones.
Yeah, Hannah Nicole Jones. She tweeted yesterday about the about Americans dropping bombs on Japan and stuff, and how it was like, you know, it was a terrible thing to do. And you looked at, and again, you can tell exactly what she's done. She's not looked at the evidence and come to a conclusion. She's concluded that America's bad, everything America has been bad, so now she has to create and mould a narrative that backs up what she already believes.
Yeah.
And she came out with a load of old bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, and now historians have come up and said, no, you're not really accurate. So these people, even though they're really intelligent, I'm not disputing that, but that if you come to a conclusion first and then just look for evidence that backs up your conclusion and then ignore you're never going to get anywhere.
No.
The beauty of it is in the complexity, I think.
Yeah, of course.
I'm trying to look up this name of the book that Joe Rogan spoke about. I can't remember what it was. But no, oh, that's it. Empire of the Summer Moon by S.C. Gwynne. And it's one of the most horrifying books I've ever read. But we're horrible fuckers.
Yeah.
Can I quickly talk about a British story, the Sarah Everard thing, for 10 minutes or whatever? Because forever is not familiar with it. It was a woman that was abducted off a street in Clapham, busy street. It was in time of lockdown. And she went missing for a week. So that was all in the news. In the end, they found a burnt out body in a forest somewhere. And it transpired that it was a policeman that abducted her. He pulled over in his car, showed her his warrant card, said to her that she was breaking lockdown rules and abducted her, raped, murdered her. And it sent shockwaves through the country. Understandably, because if you can't trust the police, what can you do?
Yeah.
And I'm always cautious about labelling everyone together by the actions of one bad thing. And I was getting stuff sent to me on WhatsApp where it was a big list of what serving policemen have been tried for or are wanted for. And there were so many sex crimes and stuff like that in there. And I thought it was all bullshit. But it transpires that a lot of it isn't bullshit. And a lot of police have done quite a lot of bad stuff.
Yeah.
And it made me think. I was thinking, do these jobs attract... Does power corrupt or does... power attract corruptible people, in a sense.
Both, isn't it?
Yeah, I would have thought. Because I always think that if you look at people, I study traffic because I'm in it most of the time. But there's a way that people driving big vehicles drive is very different to the way little two-seater nippy vehicles drive. So that little nippy try to nip in and get through little gaps, and often big cars will drive right up your arse and intimidate you.
Yeah.
So does the vehicle attract a certain type of arsehole, or... Does the same normal person turn into an arsehole when driving a big vehicle? And it's the same with police and politicians, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you could go into it really wanting to make the world a better place, but when you're handed an elevated level of power, does that change your personality? Or does it attract people who subconsciously think, I'll be able to use that power? And that's what I find quite interesting. No, I think it's
definitely both. Definitely a bit of both. I mean, like, I'd mate, we always used to talk about... and you see it, look like Catholic Church scandals about kids.
Exactly the same.
It's the same thing, isn't it? If you're attracted by little kids and you could do any job in the world, well, you're probably going to go for a job that works for little kids.
Scoutmaster, church.
Yeah, in the same way that I remember watching a documentary about some paedophile ring, and the copper had to scroll through 10,000 images of his paedophile gang they caught up with. And I remember my mate saying, well, why has he got to look at all them pictures? He knows what's in them. Why has he got to sit there and look through 10,000 pictures of kids being abused? And it's like, maybe there's an element of he enjoys looking through 10,000 pictures of kids being abused. I don't know, you know? Yeah. But it's an interesting point, isn't it? And there's definitely a bit of both. Definitely.
Well, because then that was shortly followed by the case of two sisters that were murdered in a park in London, in Wembley. And the place was cordoned off. And when it all went quiet, two policemen that were guarding it climbed over the barrier and took photos of the dead bodies. and selfies with the photos of the dead bodies,
yeah.
and then sent it onto their WhatsApp group.
Yeah.
And we used to, there was the thing about grooming, wasn't it? The Asian grooming gangs, that was an issue that people would do that thing, but what was most disturbing was that they were sharing it with friends and family. And yeah, you thought, yeah. fuck, that makes it different. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because they're not even ashamed, they're kind of boasting
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
But isn't this the same? Mm. You know, if you're sharing it on a WhatsApp group, what does that do? I don't fucking know. That's what I find odd. You know, when people are in a really nice place, the first thing they do is reach for the phone. And it's like, why can't you just fucking enjoy it?
Yeah.
But it's not only that now. It's like when there's something bad's happened, people reach for their phone.
Yeah.
And it's like almost as if you get a certain amount of status for being present when something, a freak accident happens.
Yeah.
It's like, but why does that improve you as a person? Mm. I don't get it. Why does that make you more important? Why does that raise your status? It's very strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
And why? Can you imagine if you're the parents of those murdered sisters and you find out that police are doing selfies and cracking jokes?
Well, that's what makes it worse, isn't it? Yeah. Like the same with Sarah Oda, I think. That's people that are supposed to protect you.
Mm.
They're the people that you would have thought the first reaction is to try and work out what's going on and have some empathy. But then you've also got the element of like, well, it hardens you, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, you see that all the time. Sure.
It doesn't become, it does not like, oh, crap, Jesus Christ, this is the worst thing ever. Two women have been murdered. It's like, oh, there's more dead bodies.
It's a psychological survival tactic, isn't it? It's the way our brain works. It's not a freak accident, the way it works. If you're seeing it all the time, it's like changing bloody nappies, isn't it?
Do you know what I mean?
You're picking up dog poo. The first time you do it, it's like, and then all of a sudden you get used to it and you do it while you're eating a sandwich.
And the thing is, it's like, as well, I've always thought, like, for some reason, in the back of my head, I've always thought, oh, I'd love to be a paramedic. I think it's kind of the hero thing.
Yeah, you know?
But there's also the element of ever since I broke my leg like 20 years ago, whenever I see someone like, you know, you get footage of a football match and someone does it, like, oh, I really scream and all that. But, so then that side of me thinks, oh, I'd never make a paramedic.
Yeah.
Conversely, again, whenever I've been in a situation where something's happened, I seem to be quite good at kind of like going forward and dealing with the situation, switching off the kind of the part of my brain that's like convulsed by it. But so you never really know how you're going to cope until you're in that situation.
Yeah.
So I suppose there's lots of people who couldn't deal with that. Yeah. They wouldn't go into the police. They couldn't deal with seeing dead, mutilated bodies. But other people are fine with it, and it's like not a problem. I mean, obviously, it goes to a different level when you're taking photographs of it. But there is an element of just it becoming kind of nothing.
That reminds me of something that you, plenty of times in our lives. I'm 6 years older than you, but plenty of times, I can think of plenty of times when you put me straight in so much more of a mature way. And it reminds me of, I don't know, I must have been in my 30s. And I was a bit bored of what I was doing. And we were around Soho quite a lot. And I thought, you know what, I wouldn't mind working in the sex trade, because you'll be seeing sort of like working in a sex shop, because there'll be loads of sexy women and stuff like that. I think it must have been a phase where testosterone was pumping around my body, with my testicles must be working overtime. And I remember saying it to you, and you just pulled a face. You said, I couldn't think of anything worse. The dehumanisation, you just see the ugly side of it. It's like you're looking behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz. You're looking behind the mechanics of it, and the lowering and dehumanisation of women and stuff. And it just stopped me in my tracks, and instantly I knew you were right. Mm. And it's the same sort of thing, desensitised. Yeah, and I think that's the issue with a lot of pornography. And I think you're right; it's a pornography desensitising us men as well.
Yeah.
I'm not going to shit on men, because I think men get a hard time out in the ether. But we do have issues, not we, all of us.
Yeah,
it's like if let's say there's. There's like 100,000 women and there's 100,000 men and 100,000 cases of sexual assault or of varying degrees. Doesn't mean that each man does one sexual assault each.
No, exactly.
Probably about 5-10% of the men are doing most of us are okay. So I'm not shitting on all men. However, it should be grown up to look and say, hold on, there are some kind of perversions in a way.
Yeah.
About that case where the guy, they found that the guy that had committed two murders in the 70s or 80s, murdered two girls, they found him with DNA, and when they searched his computer, they found all things. He was working in a hospital as a maintenance man, and he had access to the morgue, and he was raping over 100 dead bodies. That's how they found out. And they found him on a computer having sex with dead bodies in the mall.
Oh, good Lord.
I don't know. I bet you though, if you did some psychological evaluation, there's something that warped him in childhood.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 100%.
And that isn't forgiving in any way. You know, I'm not looking for, I'm not making excuses. I'm just interested in what takes someone there. And yeah, I always have been. If I see a down and out on the street, I want to know their story. How did you, what was your journey?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's nearly always the case, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, always. Down and out on the street, I was listening to that fellow the other day, I forget the name of him, on a podcast about the green environmental guy.
Yeah.
And, but he also deals, he wrote San Francisco.
Oh, right.
And he's talking about the
Michael Schellenberger.
Yeah, Schellenberger. And he's talking about the homeless crisis in San Francisco. And he said 100% of them have got drug addictions and mental issues.
Yeah.
100% of them. There's no one there who's
simply
no
can't
one in
afford.
That, yeah, who's just down on their luck. Very, very few.
Yeah.
Living in those extreme circumstances. Very few of them are just down on their luck and falling out of a job and got. They're nearly all addicted to something or have psychological issues.
There's that Gabor Mate, I think he's a psychologist that links drugs, and he basically says that all addiction is a coping mechanism for previous trauma.
Yeah, and not that interested in stuff, but all of these extreme cases of violence and murder, all these big, high-level, high-profile, Jack the Ripper type people, whenever they get interviewed, they've all got issues from their childhood.
So I think one of the biggest problems in the Western world is unaddressed trauma and psychological issues, because it just knocks onto everything else.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I learned something really interesting in lockdown, was that I was teaching my seven-year-old daughter at the time, trying to teach her fractions, and for love nor money, she couldn't get it. The frustrating thing is I found it easy, and I couldn't understand how this person I'm trying to teach couldn't. And I would slowly get wound up. And then someone would say, why don't you cut a pizza in just eight pieces? It's like, you'd be, I haven't tried that 800 fucking times. You know what I mean? How many bags of sweets I've opened and stuff. But then what would happen? It'd build and build and build. And then it would come out an explosion. And she was my vector. Mm. And then I worked out that I was frustrated with myself, that I couldn't articulate in a way that made her understand, and my frustration with myself came out of anger directed at her.
Yeah.
So what I was thinking is that a lot of my emotions come out, or all our emotions come out elsewhere, and they aren't the deep-rooted thing.
Yeah.
And I see it all the time. So if my son is irritating me a bit by making a bit of noise and I've lost my keys, I'm looking for the keys. I'm getting irritated with not being able to find the keys.
Yeah.
And then he's making a bit more noise. I'm saying, quiet down, quiet down. I'm looking for the keys. I get more wound up, checking every pocket twice, looking at every hook. Who's moved it? Yeah. Who's moved my keys? Yeah, that's instantly. Yeah. And then all of a sudden he makes a noise and then he gets the explosion. Yeah. So the level of explosion he's getting isn't directly relatable to the problem he's caused. Mm. He's getting both barrels because of my frustration elsewhere.
Yeah.
And that was my issue with therapy, because I had about a therapy about a year ago, and I find it fascinating. I'm glad I did it, don't get me wrong. But I've got certain issues, which I'm happy to go into, I'm an open book. But what I was thinking was that I've got certain issues and certain emotions, and most of them link back to definitely childhood. Our mum died when I was 10, when you were 4, So I've got more memories than you, but next to none. And I have certain issues around how it was dealt with at the time that caused things. And I did about a therapy, and some of the stuff we came out with made sense, but I was thinking, but is therapy a discovery of a truth, or is therapy an invention of a narrative that makes my emotions make sense?
Yeah.
And I don't think we'll ever know. And we are narrative creating machines. Darryl Brown said in his book Happiness, we are the stories we tell ourselves. I know that two separate people can have exactly the same experience and have polar opposite reactions to it, depending on how they think.
Yeah.
Therapy isn't about looking at the future. Therapy isn't about looking at into the present. Therapy is about retelling the stories of the past to make you happier today.
Mm.
So it's all about trying to figure out where the truth is. And I don't think any of us know what the truth is. I think a lot of I think we're tribal beings. I think we are. We want to be part of a group desperately, and now there are so many groups to be part of. It used to be religion, and I've done it. I've been a football fan, tribal football. I tried to get into religion, didn't work for me. When Uber came out, I wanted to be a Twitter warrior, a cab driver Twitter warrior, and fight a fight, and wanted to join a group and work my way up in a group and increase my standing within that group.
Well, I remember when you were younger, like labels.
Oh, yeah. That's all big about thing, chasing status thing. And getting noticed. That's the thing with childhood. You want to fit in, you don't want to stick out, but you want to be noticed. And it's working out how to get in, but it's bloody difficult. Yeah. That's why I like being old, because you don't have to worry about that shit.
True, isn't it?
But so what happens is there are so many groups to join now. So you've got Black Lives Matter, or you've got Antifa, or you've got the Proud Boys, or you've got, you know, the green movement.
Yeah.
And people are really angry. They join these groups and they're really angry. But are they really angry about that? Or are they really upset about the lack of meaning in their life?
Mm.
And they're trying to make sense of that pain and suffering within them.
Yeah.
And then they find something to hook it onto that then makes their anger and upset make sense.
Yeah.
And I genuinely believe there's truth to that.
Yeah.
I haven't heard it anywhere else. I've just worked it out all through being locked down and doing homeschooling. And I'm genuinely, and it's a mishmash of things I've seen.
Yeah.
So I think so many of our frustrations aren't really where they are.
No.
The problems are deeper.
Yeah.
But we find reasons to bolt it on to make it all make sense.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we are at the moment. And I think we've got then throw in a media that is designed to stir that shit up.
Yeah.
Sow the seeds of that.
Yeah.
And then make it grow because they get more eyes.
Yeah.
We've never had a time when we can just plug into this shit 24 hours a day, have we?
No, it's terrible, isn't it?
They used to say, don't talk about it at the dinner table,
didn't they? Yeah, exactly. Well, there's a bit of ancient wisdom, isn't
it? Yeah, bloody right. Instead, we could just plug in 24 hours a day and come out angry.
Yeah. Yeah, because it never makes you happier, does it?
No. Anyway. That's it. We haven't solved any problems.
On that high note.
Just think. Sorry. Well, there's been more jokes today, though, I think, hasn't there?
Yeah, a few more. Yeah.
I think so. All right. We still haven't sorted in some fade in or fade out music.
No.
We're still rough.
And we missed loads of stories, huh?
Yeah,
loads of crazy stories. But there's more than enough to.
Yeah. All right. Well, till the next time, who knows when? And I'm not going to say subscribe. Do you know what they say? Subscribe.
Yeah, click like and subscribe.
Get us whatever. Subscribe if you want. I don't mind. This is therapy. If people want to listen, then listen. I'm not fussed. Anyway, laters.
See ya.